Unveiling the secrets A-list copywriters use to make themselves and their clients millions. This is the Copywriters Podcast with your host, the world's greatest copywriting coach, David Garfinkel.
Our special guest today, John Jantz, is going to tell you about what could be the single most valuable sentence you have in your business for getting clients and customers. John's the author of the Wall Street Journal bestseller, Duct Tape Marketing. I'm sure you've heard of it, as well as three other books. Now, when John talks about core, I'm pretty sure he's not talking about your abs, your lower back, or your hip flexors. No, the single most valuable sentence is what he's referring to, and John's talking about your core message. It's also something he calls your talking logo. John says, like a traditional printed logo, a talking logo is a tool that allows you to communicate verbally the single greatest benefit of doing business with your firm. A talking logo is a short statement that quickly communicates your firm's position and ideally forces the listener to want to know more. And at the end of the day, that's exactly what every business wants, isn't it? John also trains and licenses small business consultants around the world, so you'll definitely want to hear what he has to tell us today. Right after I tell you this, copy is powerful. You're responsible for how you use what you hear on this podcast. And most of the time, common sense is all you need. But if you make extreme claims, and or if you're writing copy for offers in highly regulated industries like health, finance, and business opportunity, you may want to get a legal review after you write and before you start using your copy. My larger clients do this all the time. So, John, welcome, and so glad you're here.
Hey, thanks for having me. And I know not some people are listening, maybe not everybody's viewing, but I love your pinky and the brain hat up there. Which one do you relate to the most?
Depends on my mood. When I'm in a silly mood, it's definitely pinky. But when I'm in a serious mood, it's more like the brain. So I relate to them both. I kind of see them like the conscious and the unconscious mind constantly fighting with each other.
Yeah, okay. I think there's a good balance.
Well, thank you. So, you know, I want to talk about strategy for a second with you, because in your book, Duct Tape Marketing, you quote Sun Tzu from The Art of War with this quote: strategy without tactics is the slowest route to victory. Tactics without strategy are the noise before the defeat. Now, I understand strategy and strategic plannings are key foundational pillars of your whole approach to marketing. So before we get into the core marketing message, could you explain what strategy means for a business owner and for a pro copywriter, since our listener is probably one of those?
You bet. So for us, strategy, if you think about it like a pyramid, it starts with actually developing, you know, how we're going to stand out, how we're going to be different, how people are going to see, you know, our value. But it's truly built on, you know, what are your business objectives? You know, so many people just kind of go into marketing and say, we should do this, we should do that, you know, without any real thought about where do we want to be in a year from now, 3 years from now. So marketing strategy, believe it or not, starts on a business strategy foundation or business objectives foundation. Then there are three components to, in my book, at least, to marketing strategy. There is the brand strategy, there is the growth strategy, and there is the customer strategy. And then the cherry on top of that is, let's face it, in most businesses, the team is going to execute the strategy. So there is the team strategy as well. So a lot of people, when they think about marketing strategy or they talk about marketing strategy, heck, Google the term marketing strategy and you're going to come up with a list of tactics. Most of them are focused on getting leads or getting customers. This holistic view, when we get businesses to think about this holistic kind of end-to-end journey that is marketing strategy, then all of a sudden, they not only start determining what are the things we should do, probably as important, what are the things that we shouldn't be doing? And so it really becomes the roadmap and the guide for everyone we work with.
Well, that's great. And I really appreciate it. So I started out in business journalism. I worked at Rockefeller Center, New York. I was surrounded by all these people and reports and consulting firms and Bain and Boston Consulting Group. And I always thought of strategy as this large, abstract, you know, concept that didn't really have anything to do with the real world, but was like, I don't know, necessary for, intellectual completeness or some kind of crap like that. And I really appreciate how close to the ground everything you're talking about is.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that that's a lot of people's view. It's like when people talk about selling, I hate to sell. Well, no, you don't hate to sell. You hate the way you've been sold to. And I think that right. That's true of strategy is, oh, I don't need strategy, or we've done that before. Well, not really. And so I think that's what we've really tried to do is, and when we were talking maybe off air before we got started, I don't have time for anything that's not really practical. And so that's why that's, you know, I actually self-proclaim myself as the world's most practical small business marketing expert, because you can do that, right? But I do think that that's a thread that I try to put in everything.
No, I really appreciate that. And to me, in business, at least, that's practical is the only way to go. But I guess you and I could agree there are other people who at least behave differently, even if they don't admit it. So, all right. Thanks for the background and on foundation on strategy. Now let's get down to the meat of the topic today. Why is strategic planning so important when you're crafting your core message, and how is it different from just coming up with a slogan or a tagline?
Yeah. And for us, I have this simple device we call a core message, but it's really the underpinning for the entire strategy. We're going to bring it to life. It's not going to be something we put on business cards or the back of invoices and, you know, call it a day. It's actually, we're going to live this thing. And so the core message is really just the embodiment of, you know, the promise to solve our ideal clients' greatest problem. Nobody wants what we sell. They want their problem solved. In fact, in some cases, they'd rather not have what we sell, but they buy it to solve a problem. So that's really the kind of the underpinning of this idea. But the core message then just becomes this simple device, if you will, to get us started. But it's based very, very firmly in who is our ideal customer? What problems are they experiencing that they want solved? How can we actually promise to solve them in a way that truly differentiates us from everybody else who says they do what we do? I mean, that's the basis of the entire process. But we bake this thing down, like a good copywriter would a headline. We bake this thing down to the essence of somebody going, really, tell me more about that. That's really what we want, out of a core message. Like, how do you do that?
I agree. I mean, I feel like the same thing should happen with a lead generation ad, whether you're using your core message or some version or, development iteration off of it. And you know, before I got into direct marketing, I saw so much marketing as so much of a waste of food, all of these very clever, smug sayings, sometimes more mystical than a Zen koan. I mean, just unbelievable. You're obviously talking about something very understandable and useful, but let's talk about some of those mistakes, because I think possibly even some of the more advanced copywriters and marketers listening today are subject to them, maybe not through their own devices, but because of what clients think is good or cool or necessary.
So you want me to just blabber on about all the mistakes?
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, any that you'd like to talk about, maybe the five for worst or something. I'm sure there's thousands, but.
Yeah. So number one is not understanding the voice of the customer. So many people, live in their little wherevers and they talk to each other, they talk to the people in their organization, and they all have their jargon and their words. And, here's what we want to have a better synergistic approach to. And the customer's out there going, I just need my knee to not hurt. One of the things that we do all the time with our clients is we interview their clients. And I will tell you, David, over doing thousands of these now, most of my best core messages have come right out of their mouths, you know, because they know the problem that they're that actually gets solved, you know, by the company. And a lot of times it's little things that seem sort of trivial, but mean a lot to them. And said in their words, all of a sudden you've got some real gold to work with. So that's number one.
Okay. Not using the customer voice. Is there a number two, number three, number four?
Oh, yeah. The number two that I come across all the time is they just want to have their entire message throw up all over everything. And by that, I mean, it's like, I want to tell you everything that I do in great, you know, detail and how I do it and why I do it and all the, you know, specs that are built into my product all in like one sentence. And, you know, consequently, the listener certainly gets bored, but they probably get lost before they get bored. So there's no sort of ability to really capture their attention on an emotional level because I'm just trying to tell them how great I am.
So that's always been a problem for, you know, for businesses and for marketers, copywriters, consultants trying to help them. I'm wondering if you've noticed, you know, in the age of social media where people think that it's a really valuable use of a viewer's time to see a picture of what they had for lunch. Has this gotten worse?
Oh, yeah. Now we can. Has that gotten worse? Oh, absolutely. But that one, people go the right direction, but then they get lost. And by that, I mean, I think increasingly buyers are going to want to know who's behind that message, like what human being, and maybe that they're vulnerable and maybe that they have aspirations and beliefs. I don't know that we need to see that what they had for lunch, but certainly as I'm sure you know, a great story can illustrate a point, you know, 10 times faster than, you know, reams and reams of other copy. So I do think that being more personal is actually a real benefit, but I think people can actually take it too far.
But a core message sort of sets the stage for a lot of that, right?
Yeah, that's 100%. 100%. Yeah. Yeah. So going back to our mistakes, the third one I was going to mention is that they're worried that they will turn somebody off. And so they don't want to narrow their focus to like, here's who we really serve. Here's our best customers. Here's actually who we'd like to have more of, but we don't want to offend anyone and like make them think we're not for them. And so consequently, we're not for anyone. And so that's probably mistake number three.
You know, I've talked about that too. And it just occurred to me, well, I have a couple thoughts. An old thought is we live in the movie star culture. You know, if you're not a celebrity, and I say movie star to represent, all these days maybe it's an influencer, but if you're not a celebrity, you're not anybody. And the thing about being a celebrity is you are loved by millions, but that's not the purpose of a business. The purpose of a business is, I would say, to solve problems and to find a customer base that has these problems and wants them to be the one to solve it. The second thing is to worry that you might offend somebody is sort of like, at sunrise, worrying that the sun's going to go down 12 hours later. Well, yeah, it is. Yeah. That's how nature works. I mean, you don't have to be virulently offensive. You know, you don't have to be like Comic the Insult Dog, but right?
Well, yeah, and it's not necessarily offending. Even is it might actually just be saying, oh, well, one time we sold product to like that person, but that's not really who we're after. But let's not exclude them. Let's not say we're not after them. You may not be offending somebody, but you are narrowing your focus so that somebody, you know, I work with small boutique agencies, and so we are, you know, that's who we license our program to, and mm-hmm. Somebody. You know, our product or our certification is not for a business owner. It's not for somebody who doesn't want to invest in their future. It's not for somebody that, you know, that is a junior marketer, you know, that worked at somewhere and wants to jump out and do their own thing. I mean, so we are very clear about who it's not for as much as we're clear for who it is for. And I think that's what I'm talking about is, I mean, maybe we offend somebody, but we probably don't go as far as offending people, but we make it easy for somebody to say, oh, you're talking about me or you're not talking about me. And I think that's sometimes hard for people to do.
Yeah, I agree. So any other mistakes that you see when people try to do their core message and they should just steer clear of them?
Yeah, I probably the other one is that we run into a lot is, hey, this sounds good, we'll say this, as opposed to this is who we are. You know, it's just like, this sounds really big and important and people will love this idea. But, you know, in the end, you know, if they love it, but then you don't deliver on it, you know, you're really doing yourself a disservice. So I see that a lot too, is people make up things that they think sound good, but they're not the reality of what their business, the value their business brings.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. How about getting down to brass tacks and walking us through a real life example, especially where, a well-defined core message actually helped the business clarify its brand and connect more effectively?
100%. So first I'll give you this idea of like create a core message. You know, when I talk about how important it is, it kind of frightens people sometimes. You know, it's like, oh, how am I going to do something that grand? And so I created this thing I call the talking logo, because I think everybody can understand this. We've all been at a networking event, chamber of commerce, you know, whatever it is, type of event. And you met somebody around the shrimp bowl. Maybe you don't go to, you know, highfalutin chambers like I did, but you meet somebody around the shrimp bowl and they say, so David, what do you do for a living? And most people are like, oh, I'm a copywriter, or, you know, I have a business that does blah, 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 right? But the talking logo is basically the ability for you to deliver, here's who I work with, here's the problem that I solve like nobody else thinks about solving, in a way that nobody else talks about it. So for example, we work with marketing agencies. So if somebody said, so John, what do you do for a living? I could easily say, well, I have a firm where we train marketing agencies, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, about a minute into that, you know, they would say, oh, there's my friend over there, I'm going to go talk to them. Because, you know, it's like, I've heard it all before, right? But so what I would say is, I work with marketing agencies who are tired of giving away strategy for free. And all of a sudden, they're like, if they've been experiencing that pain, which I know they have, because I've talked to hundreds and hundreds of them, it almost forces them to say, wait a minute, really, how do you do that? And now I get to talk about my proprietary system that does blah, 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 you know, because they've invited me to, because I've tweaked the problem that I solve, and it's a problem that they have. And instead of saying, oh, I sell marketing strategy, nobody ever wakes up and says, I'm going to go buy marketing strategy. You know, I've actually now connected their problem with my solution, as opposed to me selling it to them. They now want me to solve their problem. So that's the basis of it. There's two parts. What do you do for a living? Really, how do you do that? So it's like the core message, the sub message. So a lot of times businesses aren't really using that message in a networking setting. Maybe they are. But it really just becomes the basis of making it pretty simple for them to think about. You know, just do part A, and what do you do that really is unique is part B. So you asked me for a couple examples. We had an architecture firm one time that, you know, we started working with. We did like we always do. We interviewed their clients, which were generally large commercial contractors. And what we discovered was, so we did these calls with them, and we always, you know, kind of probe, like, what do they do that others don't? You know, that kind of digging, right? And we heard about three times, well, they're great at building buildings, designing buildings, but what we really like is they help us get paid faster. It was like, what does that mean? How does your architect help you get paid faster? Well, apparently the problem that large commercial contractors have is that they win a big project. A lot of times they have to gear up, they have to get equipment, they have to start finding people before they actually can make a draw on getting paid on the contract. And those, or they can start making their draws after those plans by the architect get approved. So like the thing is really going ahead, but they have to gear up without being paid. So particular architect, their chief architect was a city council person. They had a couple people on zoning boards and things. And so they kind of knew where all the red tape was better than a lot of firms. They were really plugged into what the priorities of communities were, and, you know, where they wanted their sewer lines and all those kinds of things. So their plans got approved faster. So we actually changed their message to, if they were, imagine an architect at the Chamber of Commerce function talking to a commercial contractor who said, so what do you do for a living? Oh, I'm an architect. Oh, great. I got five of those. Don't need any more of those. Or I help contractors get paid faster. Wait a minute. How do you do that? We changed that to their core message. Now, we brought it to life. It wasn't just a nice slogan. I mean, we actually did some products and services directly related to it. So we brought it to life. But it took them from being middle of the pack at best in my opinion, to being the number one design build architect in their community. And it was very much due to them making their entire business strategy around that core message.
That's really interesting. And it's such a great example. I'm wondering, did they know this? I mean, or in other words, the way they were doing things, it's, well, this is just the professional way. You want to do things as smart and efficiently as you can. And it really didn't occur to them one way or the other how much the contractors were getting paid. I mean, what was their, I guess my question is, what was their state of awareness, not only of these words, but of this whole situation before you found it out in your interviews?
So, in my experience, you hit the nail on the head. They're quite often aware of it. They just don't think it's a big deal. They just don't think that, like, we've got all these letters behind our names and we went to lots of big schools, you know, to be important professionals, and that's what they care about. You know, so I think that a lot of times, in fact, in this particular case, I got some pushback because they were like, no way, that's not it. That can't be it. Right. You know, I'm not going to go out there and say that. And then they started and all of a sudden they're like, oh, and that's why I love doing the interviews with their clients, because a lot of times I'm there, basically they're saying, look, I didn't make this up. They said it, you know, here's the transcript. Here are their words, you know, go look at your reviews on Google. People are saying the same thing. And so a lot of times I'm just really showing them how powerful it could be if they actually paid attention to it.
Yeah, that's awesome. We're coming towards the end and I'm fascinated about your whole licensing thing. And, and even, I think you have, so you have a giveaway for our listeners. And also I'd like to hear about what you do when you license an agency or a consultant.
You bet. So what we do is we teach strategy, we teach them how to build a business, but we also give them a proven system that they can go out and sell. And we've developed something we call Strategy First, and is just based on the fact that anytime a client comes to us and says, I need a website, and I say, yes, you do, but we're going to go through Strategy First. And so we run them through a very set engagement, takes 30, 45 days, has set deliverables, set meetings, set, you know, everything we do in between those meetings. It's a very repeatable, proven system. We've done it ourselves thousands of times now, and we license that system to agencies who, you know, are really getting beat up on tactics work. You know, tactics pricing is kind of going, you know, going to the floor, and so they realize that they need to actually sell strategy to attract the right clients, to be more of a trusted advisor as opposed to a vendor. So we give them a complete system for that. We also, just because we've been doing this for 30 years and we have, you know, over 400 agencies that have gone through this, that have been at pretty much every level from startup all the way through exit. So we also give them a complete framework for growing and, you know, managing and building retainers and pretty much everything you would do to build million-dollar agencies from using this proprietary approach.
Okay. And so what is it that people can get?
So we have a couple tools that I'll send them to a page. It's dtm.world/growth. So DTM, like duct tape marketing, dtm.world/growth. Mm-hmm. And that page, actually, we work with a lot of business owners as well as agencies, so they can kind of choose their adventure. If you're an agency listening or if you're a business owner, you can go there and take the, we have a freebie for either one. You just kind of say, I'm this, and you'll get the one that's more appropriate for your needs. You can obviously pick both of them up as well, so you get a little flavor for the kinds of tools and things that we develop and deliver.
Okay, it sounds really good. Nathan, did you have any questions? I know you're a longtime fan of John yourself.
Nathan? No, he's not a longtime fan. I changed his life. Didn't he say that? We should get that on tape, right?
That's right. He did.
I will say, I started listening to the Duct Tape Marketing podcast. Man, it feels like almost a decade ago. You've been doing it for a long time.
I need to get some stickers. It's my 20th anniversary.
Wow. Okay. Congratulations.
Yeah. And I will say, when I first got into market sales and marketing, copywriting, all of that stuff, it was one of the podcasts and the book itself. They were both actionable. They were both easy to implement, things that it wasn't just theory. It was stuff that me just getting into it, I was able to implement. And I've been a fan ever since. So I just want to say thank you for coming on and thank you for sharing your knowledge. And thank you for making it accessible. Thank you for making it easy. And I would definitely recommend anybody who's a fan of this podcast, go check out Duct Tape Marketing, because what we try to do here is, at least on my part, is heavily influenced by what I learned from you first getting into this world.
Well, I appreciate that very much. I'm a terrible copywriter because I just write like I speak, and you know, nobody really wants that.
That's one of the things we preach is write like you.
That's what works. It's the hardest thing to do. Are you kidding?
Okay, so dtm.world/growth.
Yep.
All right. We will make sure to have a link to that in the show notes. If you want to catch the show notes for this episode, head on over to copywriterspodcast.com. We also have, over 400 other episodes that we've been doing this for quite a while as well. And until next time, we will catch you later.
Catch you later. And thanks again, John.
Thanks. Thanks so much.
Hey, did you enjoy today's show? Want to help get it into the ears of more listeners? Be sure to subscribe, rate, and review on your favorite podcast app.
This is the Copy and Funnels Podcast Network.